This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 21st, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 252. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, a former newspaper editor in Canada is wanted by the Hong Kong government. His crime? Advocating for democracy in Hong Kong. Hear from Victor Ho, who is part of a campaign by overseas activists to create a Hong Kong parliament in exile. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Victor Ho is the former editor-in-chief of the Tsingtao Daily's Vancouver edition. He is one of three people wanted by the Hong Kong police for subversion under the Beijing-imposed national security law. His crime? Being the chair of the Hong Kong Parliament Election Organizing Committee. It's a group that wants to hold an online election next year to elect a parliament in exile to protest the broken promise of democracy in Hong Kong and the Chinese Communist Party's crackdown on politicians, lawyers, and journalists in Hong Kong. I spoke with Victor Ho from his home in Richmond, British Columbia.
We emphasize that all the details on the voting machine, on the qualifications of the voter, on the qualification of the candidates. We don't have these details. We are, planning to step by step to use about half year or more time to make the details more concrete. After the launch of the press conference, just when the Hong Kong Security Bureau issued a wanted warrant that the initiator, the chair and the member of the organizing committee allegedly commit the national security law in violation of the so-called subversion of state power. We are so curious. This is a Hong Kong parliament, not China parliament. How come you allegedly accuse us subversion of state power? We just a city's legislative council nature. However, we have to face the charge of Hong Kong police. But we just wonder how they can exercise the mission to get us arrested. How can they accomplish it? We don't know. And we even want the federal government of Canada to bring up this issue to Hong Kong government. And I want our government to make it clear that what should Canadian government do? Now, is there any present danger on this wanted list members? How would the police exercise their power under this charge? Will they send people to Canada? Since the Canada and Hong Kong, the extradition agreement suspended since 2020. So how come this happen? We're just curious, Bob.
Are you taking extra steps for your own safety at home? And when the people from CSIS came, what did they tell you?
Oh, yeah. On Wednesday morning, two CSIS officers came to my doorsteps. I didn't let them go into my house. I just asked them, how come you got my address here? We have our way to do it. And then their prime question is, are you safe? I said, I'm okay. They want to arrange a meeting with me. Initially, I suggest on coming Friday. And then now 18th of August, I got a message, a voicemail from the CSIS officer. They may change the reschedule the meeting to next week, maybe. I don't know what happened. But the two officers didn't mention too much. They are friendly. The manner is very good. I guess the federal government, try to make sure the people on the wanted list are safe, and they manage the situation. So they send the officer to my house. Previously, they call me and leave voice message, but I can't hear very clearly, so I deleted it ultimately. And they said in my doorstep, they tried to contact me via mobile phone, but they failed, so they come to my house.
Mm-hmm.
My situation now okay. And of course, I will take extra precautions when I go outside. I won't go to Hong Kong anymore, at least for several years, I guess. But just a bit worry on my relatives and even friends in Hong Kong. I guess they may be subject to some kind of harassment by unknown forces, no matter in Hong Kong or in mainland China. But this is fact of life. I can't control the situation there.
The Hong Kong Parliament concept is not without controversy. Hong Kong dissidents living abroad are concerned about their personal information falling into the wrong hands, into the hands of the Chinese Communist Party. They're also worried that it could be used against them or against their friends and family back in Hong Kong or even mainland China. Without security and peace of mind, it could repel potential voters or candidates. So I asked Victor Ho about this concern and how it can be reconciled. When will it get to the point where you decide on what mechanism to keep that information protected and to answer any of those concerns by anybody who wants to get involved or those people who don't want to get involved because they're worried about making sure their information is kept private?
Now, first of all, some activists they intend to join the organizing committee. We have over a dozen organizing committee members around the globe. Say like in North America, in Australia, in UK, and other places. And some more are joining. Their personal data is our top priority. And we put all the online or virtual meeting, the data put on the cloud, not in a specific city, or not in a specific country. And even Hong Kong Parliament is not a Canada-based so-called Parliament in exile. We don't call it exile. We just simply call it Hong Kong Parliament because it is prepared for a post-CCP Hong Kong. It is a preempt design to let Hong Kong people, let the Hong Kongers around the world to have a direct election mechanism and controlled by those Hong Kongers and even the diaspora, we try to let the other governments in China, I mean after the CCP era, they don't have the control on the design of Hong Kong. We try to control it and use the principles like self-determination, like popular sovereignty, like full and direct election. We just want to, you know, amplify the democratic rights of Hong Kongers. And these rights are very clearly stating in the basic law, say like chapter 3, article 68. It stipulated that Hong Kong's legislative council should be ultimately go to full direct election. This is made very clear in the basic law, but it's scrapped in 2014 by the Standing Committee of National Congress in Beijing and suspended indefinitely. And then in the year of 2021, the same Standing Committee of the National Congress in Beijing, they modify a lot of the election systems articles of Hong Kong and make Hong Kong Legislative Council, the election system, no more direct election. They put a bunch of people appointed and vetted, politically vetted by Hong Kong National Security Officer, which mainly, appointed by Beijing government. So the Legislative Council no longer have direct election. So we, Hong Kong as overseas, try our best to make it happen in a virtual form, like you vote your cast, you vote your ballot online, and we try to develop a software to minimize the digital footprint, make the CCP no room or little room to trace back who vote the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
But not yet realized now. We are trying to ask the experts around the world, especially Silicon Valley, to try. Maybe it is a very milestone software in the world.
The initiator of the Hong Kong Parliament Election Organizing Committee is Elmer Yun, a Hong Kong businessman, now outspoken against the Chinese Communist Party. He used to have close business ties with the Chinese government. Here is Elmer Yun during the July 28th news conference in Toronto.
We thought about this idea not too long ago, less than 1 year ago, when I saw the Tiananmen dissidents in the States and over the world were so disorganized. After 30 years, they've done nothing, right? Disorganized. And since they don't have a representing body, nobody knows how to help them. So recently we saw the Uyghurs were very successful and the Tibetans were very successful in organizing global international protest against the communist government. So we need to learn, and especially Falun Gong, very well organized. They are the biggest media in the world right now, in different languages, dialects, and in different parts of the world. We Hong Kong people, if we want to recover Hong Kong, we need to get organized.
In 1979, one of Elmer Yun's companies did a joint venture with a subsidiary of China state-owned enterprise China Resources. He is also a co-founder of the 1992 opened Mission Hills Golf Course in Shenzhen, the world's largest golf club, which is also popular with CCP officials. I asked Ho about Elmer Yun's background.
There are question marks from some people about Elmer Yun and his old connections to mainland China, old connections to state-owned enterprises and people in the CCP. What do you know about that, and what is your answer to that concern?
Oh, yeah, I know this concern very much. Since Elmer Yun has a very deep connection in his business activities, I mean, those were 20 or more years ago, and I know it, and I also discussed with Elmer in my video program months ago, even last year, and he openly, you know, discussed with the audience. Yes, the deep connection is superficially negative image, but to my viewpoint, I accept people have a good connection with the Communist Party or Communist Circle, and then finally, he left the circle and he betrayed the evil CCP. I accept these people, and I can imagine if this guy, I mean Elmer, is a hidden spy from CCP. How come he doing something to overthrow, to ask people, to arrest people, to overthrow the CCP party? And then he get being a wanted list member from Hong Kong government. This the logical sequence, you can, if it is a spy or agent from CCP, would they do this to the whole world? They will try to, you know, protect this guy, but not to, you know, demonize this guy. So I rather observe Elmer more from his actions, from his present, you know, suggestion to how to get the international Hong Kong diaspora, Hong Kong diaspora united together and to form a new parliament in Hong Kong, and don't let the CCP or post-CCP regime to decide Hong Kong's fate. In this regard, I can see no CCP connection there. CCP won't do that.
The big story this summer is China's reaction to U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan. Next month is the anniversary of the end of the Meng Wanzhou extradition saga in Canada and the hostage taking in China of the two Michaels. Then, October 15th, local government elections across British Columbia. Vancouver's pro-Taiwan mayor, Kennedy Stewart, was warned by CSIS about CCP interference in the election.
Especially when Kennedy Stewart himself, he had people from CSIS come and visit him and warn him back at the end of May that there could be some CCP interference in the election this October. What do you see from your perspective developing over the next few months, whether the CCP allies here or even directly from mainland China will try to interfere with this election?
To this aspect, this infiltration from CCP is not a news. You can trace back last year's federal election. You know, the pro-Beijing, pro-CCP WhatsApp group and even WeChat group, you know, spread a lot of fake news on Kenny Chiu. And then finally, Kenny Chiu cannot, you know, be voted as MP. The political infiltration not only appear in the election, also in our Chinese community, the societies, the organizations there, in no matter in Toronto, in Vancouver. I think 80 80% of the societies and organizations are controlled by CCP. This is a very severe and very dangerous situation. A foreign government decide our Chinese communities to stand for Beijing government, but not loyal to Canadian government. So there seems a underground government here in our Chinese community. How come our politicians do nothing to protect our national interests, do nothing to strengthen our national security, do nothing to stop the political infiltration, but at the same time, let a lot of mainland China companies own our mining business and use our mining resources to strengthen the CCP's military power. So, what is the surface aim for our federal government in Ottawa for our voters, for our citizens, or for outside foreign government? Is there any possibilities that even our federal level officials are penetrated by CCP, so that we are in a situation of open policy to CCP, no matter in Chinese community, no matter in our provincial level officials, no matter in our federal level, the minister or something like the same level, even our MP. But we have a not so effective CSIS. CSIS is not a CIA. CSIS have just a native tiger, just to study, to collect information, to collect intelligence, but have no power to execute or to search the suspected premises. So you can see the Hong Kong government can put our citizen like me on their wanted list, and then even for 2 weeks, no reaction from our federal officials. Even raise your hand from Ottawa to ask Hong Kong government, what happened, sir? This guy is our national, but I see no any response, no any query from the official level. Since the media exposed the concerned group's open letter, and the MP, a very few MP, like Jenny Kwan, have an open letter to Premier to ask the federal government to severely condemn Hong Kong government to hurt the interests of Canadian, because this Canadian just expressed his opinion in Canadian soil. None of business from foreign government. You see? So we have very weak government. Give also this example, like two Michaels. If the U.S. don't take a alternative way to solve it, the two Michaels should be and will be still in jail in mainland. You see? So what is the ultimate interest of Canadian in Canadian on Canadian soil? Who protect them?
Younger members of the Hong Kong diaspora in British Columbia are doing what they can to promote and protect the Cantonese language and Cantonese culture in reaction to the CCP crackdown in Hong Kong.
In Hong Kong is the biggest Canadian population outside of Canada. There's a lot at stake here. Do you think there's hope for the future that those younger people who are organizing now can take the torch, if need be, to push this forward to get positive movement from our government?
Agree. I think the new generation from Hong Kong and then immigrant and land here, they would have a bigger momentum to live here and then to integrate Canadian values. They would have a strong action, but it seems maybe one decade or two decades later. You know, this is a very long-term development. And more Hong Kong people come here. I can see when Canadian Chinese society become more Hong Kong style, the bigger hope we have in the Chinese society here. Because the older generation, they will someday go away. And the new generation will take on the torch. So my hope is maybe one decade later or two decades later. But at the moment, we have nearly 2 million Chinese in Canada, in Canadian soil. Who protect them? I am not asking for extra privilege for those Chinese Canadian, but now the foreign government issued a warrant to our national. Is there any standard procedure for the government to react, or just let's see, and then pretend nothing happened? It is not a normal government and not an accountable government. You should voice out what happened if foreign government has this kind of serious allegation to your national. You should at least ask more details. But our government seems inaction. Now, it is only Hong Kong government. If this is the government in Beijing, should our Ottawa officials kowtow, knee down? I don't know.
That was my guest, Victor Ho, joining me from Richmond, BC. Victor Ho is the former editor of Tsing Tao Daily's Vancouver edition. He's also involved with the Hong Kong Parliament Electoral Organizing Committee. You can find out more information at hkparliament.com.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Taiwan firms panned for being soft on China but harsh on own government. Taiwanese business expert Xie Qianho lashed out at some industry leaders. While Taiwanese authorities will almost certainly come under fire if power rationing lasts over 6 hours, Not a single Taiwanese firm with a presence in China has dared to voice its discontent about the rolling blackouts that stretch for 6 days. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Benny Tai and Joshua Wong, among 29 Hong Kong Democrats, set to plead guilty in a high-profile subversion case. The case against 47 well-known politicians and activists centers around an unofficial legislative primary election to select opposition candidates held in July 2020, a month after the security law came into force. The defendants, many of whom have been detained for more than 17 months following their arrests, could face up to life imprisonment. 18 others in the case will plead not guilty. In Kyoto News, Tokyo Games sponsor accused of bribery got more than 50% discount. Business suit retailer Aoki Holdings Inc. paid $3.7 million for its sponsorship deal with the Tokyo Olympic Organization, less than half of what it cost other companies for similar arrangements. Haruyuki Takahashi, a former Tokyo Olympic Committee executive, is suspected of leading the decision to select the suit company as a sponsor more than a year before the official announcement. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler to ban homeless camping along common walking routes to schools. Wheeler's order would dramatically expand his months-long emergency ban on homeless camping near dangerous roadways, which he issued in February. It comes less than 2 weeks before the beginning of the school year. Despite offers to refer some of those booted from their encampments to county-run shelters, only a small portion of them accept, according to advocates and weekly figures released by the city. In King 5, Washington reports first pediatric monkeypox case. A monkeypox case was confirmed in a 17-year-old in Washington State. The Department of Health declined to specify the county for privacy reasons. So far, Washington State has reported 333 monkeypox cases, with the majority in King and Pierce counties. King County reported 271 cases, while Pierce County reported 21. In the Times-Colonist, Harbor Air's electric plane makes successful test flight. Harbor Air completed the first point-to-point test flight using its all-electric plane on August 18th, calling the journey from Richmond to Sydney a historic flight. The E-Beaver, a modified de Havilland Beaver aircraft with electric engine powered by batteries, flew 72 kilometers in 24 minutes. The first test flight was in December 2019 in Richmond. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the cast of thousands bringing us the 2022 Pacific National Exhibition Fair through Labor Day at Hastings Park in Vancouver. I got a sneak preview on August 18th where I watched the musical scientist Andy Kim play a hockey stick guitar at the Metro Vancouver exhibit.
And that is how you make music with a water bottle, folks.
Bring your own water bottle and fill it up at the regional government's exhibit. The PNE is rooted in agriculture, a showcase of one of British Columbia's most important industries. Here is PNE President Shelley Frost in the barn.
It's no secret that Mother Nature has been very hard on the agricultural community, especially southern British Columbia. People across the province watched as first as fires ravaged areas of BC, resulting in significant devastation to many of those rural communities. And then in November, the country watched in horror as farmers fought with passion to save their animals and their farms during very devastating floods. Across the communities like Linton, Merritt, Kamloops, Hope, Chilliwack, the Fraser Canyon, and Abbotsford, many of the PNE's extended fair family their farms were very much affected. And so the PNE responded with a $50,000 bursary to help with relief. Today, we're here to draw attention to our agricultural community by welcoming a few of British Columbia's future farmers and members of one of our local Fraser Valley 4-H clubs. Each year, we have hundreds of 4-H participants from across our province display and compete at the fair with their project animals. And now I'd like to introduce Tanya Schwarzel. She's representing 4-H members from across the province. Tanya actually began showing here at the PNE as a young Fraser Valley 4-H in 1994.
While the pandemic ignited several great online initiatives for 4-H members, such as the online Field to Fork Cooking Challenge for BC students grades 4 to 12, there is nothing like getting together in person. The 4-H motto is learn to do by doing. And what better way to learn than to work with 4-H members from across the province and across Canada. The PNE and the 4-H community is ecstatic to have the 4-H festival back this summer. This is the first festival since 2019. The 4-H festival runs from August 20th to 23rd. So come on down, meet the 4-H members and their projects. These projects range from cooking to cattle, goats to gardening, and llamas, and so much more. If you missed the 4-H festival, feel free to stop by the 4-H booth. It is located in Lower Farm Country. It's brand new this year and totally awesome. Thank you.
At the 2022 fair, you can watch members of local First Nations bring a cedar to new life as a war canoe at the Canoe Cultures exhibit.
Hello and welcome. My name is Sialtana and my English name is Reva Billy. When completed, the canoes are used up and down the coast of Canada and the US. But Canoe Cultures is about more than learning how to build canoes. The program promotes Indigenous ways of knowing and being, which are grounded in a profound respect for the environment and our place within it.
The fan favorite Super Dogs are back for their 45th year. The Peking Acrobats also play the Pacific Coliseum. Plus, the food, the rides, and for a little bit extra, the concerts at the amphitheater featuring Bare Naked Ladies, Randy Bachman and Burton Cummings, the Beach Boys, Nelly, Chaka Khan, and more. For more information on tickets and times, go to pne.ca.
Hi folks, we're at 1 o'clock, PM Poo. I'm Andy, Musical Scientist. Thank you so much for joining me. Enjoy the show. Thanks, everybody.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 21st, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 21st of August in 1991, a failed coup against Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev on the same day that Latvia declared independence? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's PATREON.com/TheBreakerNews.
Until next week.